Imagine flying like 18 kilometers up, and suddenly your cabin depressurizes. The water in your blood would literally begin to boil at your normal body temperature. Welcome to today's deep dive.
Yeah, it is a pretty terrifying thought to start off with.
Right. Well, we are unpacking a massive, highly technical financial report on the space tourism industry today. And our mission for you is simple. We want to cut through the billionaire PR hype to extract the actual physics and, you know, explore the scrap heap of abandoned rocket parts.
And we're also digging into these surprising legal loopholes that are quietly fueling the commercial cosmos. I mean, it is a landscape where the brutal realities of engineering collide with legal definitions in ways you really wouldn't expect.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because that 18-kilometer mark I just mentioned, that's the Armstrong limit. It is a very visceral biological red line. But the actual boundary of space is pushed much higher.
And honestly, it looks like a battlefield right now. It is heavily debated. Internationally, you have the Karman line, which is set at 100 kilometers up. That's the altitude where the atmosphere is so thin that a vehicle has to travel at what we call orbital velocity.
Meaning it's moving sideways fast enough to continuously miss the Earth as it falls.
Exactly, just to generate aerodynamic lift. But then in the U.S., well, the FAA and the military use a completely different standard. They use 50 miles or about 80.5 kilometers.
Wait, doesn't that discrepancy just turn the boundary of space into a giant marketing gimmick? I mean, looking at the data from the report, Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket crosses that 100-kilometer Karman line.
Right. They hit the international standard.
Yeah, but Virgin Galactic's space plane only reaches about 86 to 90 kilometers. They only hit the U.S. standard, yet both companies will sell you a space ticket. Are consumers essentially paying for a technicality?
Oh, that is a very fair critique. It absolutely acts as marketing leverage. But, you know, going from 85 kilometers to 100 kilometers or all the way into orbit requires exponentially more fuel. Yeah, and a completely different engine architecture. Reaching those specific altitudes dictates a spacecraft's entire design. And ultimately, that design dictates a company's financial survival.
Which completely explains the massive price gap for the consumer. I mean, Virgin Galactic is selling a 15-minute suborbital hop with just a few minutes of weightlessness for around $450,000 to $600,000.
Which is still a massive amount of money.
Oh, definitely. But meanwhile, SpaceX is selling orbital flights on their Crew Dragon for around $55 million a seat. And their spacecraft holds serious records, like a cumulative 868 days spent in space.
What's fascinating here is the sheer scale of the profitability problem. The upfront cost or the capital expenditure to build a ship that can actually survive the brutal physics of orbiting the Earth is just astronomical.
And the flight cadence is really low, right? Meaning the number of times they actually launch.
Exactly. They launch very infrequently.
So if they're spending billions to build the ship, but only flying it a few times a year, then how does the math actually work? It sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy.
Often it is. The industry has a massive scrap heap of ambitious companies that just burned through their cash. Take Rotary Rocket, for example.
Oh, I remember them.
Yeah, they spent roughly $35 million trying to build the Rodan, which was designed to be a single-stage-to-orbit vehicle. That means the whole ship goes from the launch pad to space in one piece without dropping booster rockets.
Right, and their wild idea was to use a rotating engine and nose-mounted helicopter blades to land.
Yes, helicopter blades on a rocket.
But wait, helicopter blades need air to push against. Once you leave the atmosphere, those giant rotors are just like dead weight holding the rocket back.
They found that out the hard way. The tip jets spinning those heavy rotors provided zero net benefit for actually getting to orbit in a vacuum. The physics just didn't make sense, so the finances collapsed.
Man. So to survive this incredibly high-risk environment, these aerospace companies are migrating to a geographic and legal sanctuary, Texas. And here's where it gets really interesting. Launching near the equator is basically like stepping onto a moving walkway at the airport. You get a massive physics head start. Boca Chica, Texas, sits at a latitude of 26 degrees north.
Right, so it utilizes the Earth's rotational velocity to help sling these rockets into orbit using way less fuel.
Yes.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, Texas provides a legal head start that is just as crucial as the physical one. They passed Chapter 100A, which is a law that grants spaceflight entities broad immunity from passenger injury or death liability.
Wait, let me make sure I understand this. Yep. As long as you, the passenger, sign a waiver acknowledging the risks, you basically cannot sue them if the rocket fails.
Pretty much. Unless the company purposefully ignored a glaring danger, like gross negligence or intentional harm, they are completely shielded.
Wow, that is wild.
It is, but it allows the industry to iterate rapidly. They can test and occasionally fail without the fear of a single accident resulting in a company-ending lawsuit.
So what does this all mean for you? Why should you care about helicopter rockets in a vacuum and Texas liability laws? Well, because this market is projected to skyrocket to $87 billion by 2035.
Yeah, as heavy reusable rockets drive costs down, a $50,000 stratospheric balloon flight could realistically be your next big vacation.
The commercialization of the cosmos is shifting from a billionaire's novelty to a genuinely accessible industry.
Absolutely. It is coming faster than people think.
But that raises an important question to think about before you book your seat. If terrestrial laws like Texas's Chapter 100A shield these companies from liability here on Earth, what happens to your consumer rights when a tourist is inevitably injured on a private, free-flying commercial space station orbiting at 400 kilometers?
That is the big unknown right now.
Exactly. When that predictable transaction goes wrong in the vacuum of space, whose laws actually protect you?